The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Head on over to patreon.com/
The MMA Roadshow
right now to support the podcast and sign up for our premium content. And now, here's the podcast.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 255. My name is John Morgan, and Cold Coffee is with me.
And I'm not dead.
He's with all of us. He is still on the planet.
I am still here.
We are here at the expansive grounds of the Casa de Cold Coffee.
If you look outside, you'll notice I picked up some of off the grounds.
The staff did, you say?
The staff,
Took care of some of the trimmings,
a.k.a.
of your
my mom.
Luscious landscaping. No, it looks good out there. I mean, look. A beautiful Thursday afternoon in February, and we're sitting here with the windows open, short sleeve shirts on, t-shirts, chilling. I mean, celebrating the fact that you're still alive,
right?
with a couple of frosty cold PBRs. I'm sure you haven't been able to enjoy many of these adult beverages.
This is the first one I've had since the surgery.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
How's it feeling good?
It is, but it tasted weird at first. I think it's just because I haven't had beer in my system. But it tastes a little weird, but it's getting better.
Oh, it's going to, as soon as it melds with all your industrial strength painkillers, man, you'll be doing all right.
Once the muscle relaxers kick in, it should be spot on.
Well, listen, for a lot of people, I mean, this is going to be the first that they're hearing from you. It's the first I've got a chance to see you, man. I was out of town quite a bit of the time as you were recovering, but gotta say, I mean, you know, you seem with it. You're moving a little gingerly.
Yeah,
you got some titanium rods in your back,
some rods,
right?
And screws and stuff. Yeah, they fused my T5 through the T7, so they had to kind of section off and pull off some of the bone so they could get to the actual tumor and pulled it off. And it's funny, I went in for a checkup today, my wound check. I've got the staples removed, which. Sounds a lot worse than what it actually felt. It actually, I didn't really even feel him sort of coming out. I was going to videotape and figure we could throw on Patreon, but I was like, this is kind of gnarly. I was like, nobody really wants to see some staples.
Oh,
removed.
You messed up. You should have.
I know. I should have. But
maybe they can put staples back in.
Just to put them
just
back
so
out.
That we can view it
nah,
and tape it
I
again.
Don't
no?
do that.
No?
I don't want to do that. it's just stiff. Stiff and sort of overall soreness. Dealing with some like bad muscle spasm, which are just as painful as anything else I've felt. So that's why I took some muscle relaxers. So I think that was some award-winning PBR should have me right as rain here soon. But it was a pretty intensive process. What we thought going in was going to be a 4 to 5 hour procedure ended up being closer to 8 hour procedure.
Yeah, it was about 7.5 hours.
Yeah, seven and a half hours.
Checking in with your family about 6.5 hours after what was supposed to be a 4 hour procedure, and they were like, just
still in there,
still in there. Mm-hmm. We're getting a little concerned at
them.
That point.
Yeah, I know they were. I know they were a little worried, and I had no idea how long it was until I got out and I actually was in the. There's an initial recovery area outside of the surgery, and it was in there that the guy was like, yeah, you know, you were in there for about 7.5 hours. And I was just like, oh, shit. You know, like, is that good? Or, you know, you just wonder if there's complications or whatever.
Yep.
But part of it, I think, with them going in, and it's a pretty decent size incision, so I think they either did it in two sort of sections. And when I was getting the staples out today, you know, because I've been experiencing some soreness, you know, when you hear the – this lovely physician assistant, whatever, she's talking about how, yeah, you know, they kind of had to really stretch and pull down on it when you're on your side. And so when you think about like a slab of meat and your back's just sort of wide open and they're yanking down on your back to kind of open it and get into it, you know, it's pretty gnarly, but it explains why the hell my back hurts so bad. And my side is pretty still sort of banged up, but overall, I'm moving. They think that I'm moving really good for as short time away as it's been. You know, I've been trying to, did little short trips to the grocery store and stuff just to sort of stretch the legs out and just sort of start easing it, because that's the hardest part. It's one thing to stay laying down, which even that, you know, you think that's easy, but after a while your butt starts hurting, you know, laying down, you want to start shifting, but the actual movement of sort of standing up again and having that compression of when gravity's pulling and you're pulling down on this hardware and stuff that's been inserted in there was really, really painful. Oh. But it's getting better and better each day. I'm able to drive.
That's good.
Which was good. So I actually drove to the doctor's appointment today. And if it keeps going how it is, I should be back on the road for the Columbus show, which I'm really, really looking forward to.
I was going
to
say, it sounds like the plans for people that want to know, you know, UFC 248 is here in Vegas, but I think you're just going to kind of sit that one out. I mean, it's just a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah.
And I think we said, hey, you know, you can help us out, obviously work from
home.
Yeah, we'll do the road show. We'll get together for that. But that way you don't have to carry around gear and, you know, set up and break down and all that stuff. But, by about, I guess it'd be a little bit more than a month from now. Maybe
a little over a month.
Be on the road for UFC Columbus, which, by the way, is a hell of a card. But Ohio, of course, means, I mean, you went to school in Columbus and got roots
home.
There, man.
Yeah, that's home. So I'm looking forward to that one. So that'll be a nice reward for, you know, staying the course and healing up properly and not pushing it, because that's the biggest fear is pushing it, you know, because nobody wants to sit on their butt, and everybody wants to contribute to the team, and, you know, and I have the utmost thanks for the team sort of backfilling and taking care of stuff. But you want to get back in, you want to, you know, start contributing again, you want to get out of the house and stuff. But I also realize that, you know, you have to be smart about it, because the last thing I want to do is affect the hardware before it's fully set, you know, reopen this giant fucking incision on my
22
back.
22 staples, by the way.
Yeah, 22 staples. It's a pretty decent size. It's a pretty decent size incision, you know, and I saw my doctor today, and it's funny, when I first saw him after the thing, I saw him in the hotel, and I was just like, hey, doc, I was like, how you doing? He's like, I'm still sore. I'm still tired from working on you. I was like, well, I appreciate what you did. So
that's crazy, man. It's funny, right? Like, man, as busy as we all are, it's like, oh, I wish I could just have a day where I could just lay around and not do nothing, right?
Yeah.
When you get 2 weeks of it,
you look
not
you
so
a little
fun.
Stir crazy. But it's been good, you know, and it's been, you know, I've been lucky enough that my mom was able to come into town and has been an angel for me, helping out, you know, pitching in, and she's been good to kind of just set me down and not let me overextend myself, because the last thing I need to do is do something that sets back the recovery and stuff like that, because, you know, it's been tough, you know, staying home, but I realize it all works out, you know, as long as I just stay the course and stay healing and stuff. And, you know, the fact that I'm now actually having my first PBR
damn
in a
straight.
Couple weeks is good. It
damn
shows
straight.
That things are trending in the right direction. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward.
Well, it's
looking
good
forward
to have
to get
you
back,
man.
Road,
we're all worried about you, obviously. So it's good to have you. Good to have you back to full strength. And by the way, if you want to see a picture of that 22 staples in Cold Coffee's back, make sure you go to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. We have posted a pic over there. Cold Coffee was nice enough to allow us to post that. Yeah. Of course, he didn't produce the video of them being removed today, but he did allow us to post it. And it is a pretty gnarly looking cut.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty.
By the way, shout out to Sean Sheehan of Severe MMA for recording that commercial that started off the show, plugging our Patreon. That was just so nice of him. I just wanted to give a shout out to him. I thought it was so cool of him to offer that. You know, we're trying to grow the Patreon this year.
Yes.
He's done a successful job over at Severe MMA, and he said, hey, let me give a shout out to you boys. And so I said, well, thank you so much. So we actually have some new content on there, post UFC 247, sat down with the boys from MMA Junkie Radio, and I think we're going to start doing that kind of on a weekly basis and have a little bonus. It's kind of like old school MMA Junkie Radio. They don't get to, you know, they got a new format now. They're doing a podcast, but I think sometimes they wish they could go a little bit longer and, you know, have a little bit more free-flowing discussion, and I think that's what we're all going to do. So we're going to have some bonus content. We'll have some more things there as well. So speaking of Sean Sheehan, part of what got that going, the UFC is going back to Dublin. That was announced. And Sean Sheehan has been mentioning that he might like a rematch in the drinking contest that we had back in the day that I will say he beat me in.
Yeah.
But new facts have come to light. It turns out he may have potentially massaged the rules a little bit, or potentially I don't want to call the man a cheater. I'm just saying he might not have quite adhered to the regulations that were set in place that night. Now, I will say I was always a little unhappy with the rules of the contest that evening because it was just literally how fast one could chug one beer.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like I was at a disadvantage there. I mean, I do like my frosty beverages.
I bet
beverages.
You were already probably like 13, 14.
Oh, I was. It was bad. It was, in fact, it's my wife was with us, if you remember. We actually have a cool picture. I'm going to put it on Patreon.com as well. Man, this was a different era in the MMA junkie days, man. Yeah. We had a crew with us over there. And it was almost 5 years ago.
Was I over there?
You were there. You were there without a beard,
uh-huh.
Clean shaven. So in this picture, we're going to put it on Patreon as well. Clean shaven Colt Coffee is in there.
Mm-hmm.
The young Mike Bond is there looking. First of all, this picture is hilarious. I don't know why he is so damn mad. But he is angry. It's like he's literally scowling at the camera. My wife is in there. Sandu is there. Abby's there. Simon Head, Pear. The whole crew's there. So it's a great picture. And of course, it's even better because we're at Nando's, which where else would
of
we
course,
be?
Of course. Of course.
We're crushing some Nando's.
Well, especially if you can find that on Patreon. I'm going to see if I can find a picture from Dublin. I remember it was one of the ones where I remember you at the time, you were like, don't ever post that. It was a picture when you were carrying a tray of Guinnesses over, and I remember you knocked one of the Guinness over, but rather than put the tray back down, you tilted the tray and drank the Guinness off the and I remember I snapped a picture of it. I think I have it somewhere on the cloud because it was like multiple phones ago. But I think I had the presence of mind to upload it to Google Drive.
And sadly, that's not even the same night. You know what? On Patreon, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
That
we'll was, have to find it.
That was not my finest moment. I did drink a beer off of a tray.
Tray beer.
But yeah, so anyway, Sean Sheehan is hoping to get a rematch. But I don't know. Unfortunately, I hate to say, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it over to Dublin. It's going to be a fight night. We know Conor McGregor is not fighting in the 3 Arena over there. God bless him, but that is a small venue. So we'll see what kind of card they come up with. But unfortunately, I think our man Simon Head and our man Abby Saban will probably end up handling that one. But anyway. All right, listen. I know you've been locked up. But did you get a chance to watch UFC 247? Because it seems like all the discussion still, I mean, even damn near a week later, is about UFC 247 and, about how the main event was scored. And
yeah.
So I'm kind of curious. You watched it on TV, I'm assuming. And I'm assuming
did.
You did it under the influence of some
pain pills,
some very strong industrial strength drugs. So how did you take it? Because I'll be honest. I watched it live, cage side, and I had it for Dominic Reyes. I had it for Dominic Reyes the first three rounds. By the way, I wanted to tweet this so bad, but I didn't want to ruin my career either as a journalist because it's definitely like I don't know a little too opinionated or whatever. But you know he's a former IT guy. Dominic Reyes is. Okay. He was a high school IT guy.
Okay.
And so I was just, after the thing, I was going to be like, hey, you know, I hit up Dominic for a new password, and he said Reyes 123. Because I thought he took the first three rounds.
Yeah.
But I went back and watched it. And if you're gonna watch
it. I need to go back and rewatch it.
Here's the thing. I always tell people this. If you're going to go back and rewatch it. Now, listen. If you're just trying to be entertained and you're the casual fan, just hang out and watch it. Just, you know, enjoy it. But if you really want to be dialed in and you really care about what you think, make sure you watch it with the sound off. You know what I mean? Because you're not getting any influence from the play-by-play team, you know, the announcers. And
that
I'm not saying
happen.
Yeah,
that
and I'm not
happen.
Saying they're doing a bad job. I'm just saying they're going to give you some influence. You know, what they point out, hey, look at that, look at that. They are pointing out something to you that you're going to key in on. You also hear the crowd. And I've always said, you know, I think the crowd does influence even subconsciously, you know, because they cheer over one thing or they roar over one thing. And they're silent over something else. And in your head, I think subconsciously, you think, oh, that was a bigger combo, where it might not be. I mean, one of the loudest
sounds.
It's
more devastating, you know, when you hear the commentary go and the crowd go.
So true. One of the loudest sounds you'll ever hear in a cage is when somebody throws a high kick and it's blocked by the glove. It makes a huge, loud sound.
It's true.
It's not landing. You know what I mean? But it goes pop.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to watch without sound. But so I went back and I watched it without the sound. And I tell you what, when I went back and reviewed it, I think John Jones took round three. And I think that's what this whole thing boils down to is round number three. I did talk to Joe Silva briefly because, you know, Dana White said in the post-fight press conference, Joe Silva had it a draw. And so I reached out to him and I'm like, hey, did you have round three as a 10-10? He said he actually had round two as a 10-10. So I thought rounds one and two. Yeah. By the way, it was great. I was like, it's great to hear you're still watching watching fights. He's like, dude, I don't miss a fight. He's like, I watch every card.
That's awesome.
I text all the guys throughout the night. He's like, we're in constant communication with Dana, with Lorenzo, with the all the old boys. They still talk about the fights, right? And Joe was like, dude, it is so much more enjoyable to me now because I have no responsibility. I have nothing. I'm just watching the fights and I'm enjoyed. I was like, man, that's cool. I'm glad to hear. Because by the end, he was a little frayed around the edges, man. But
understandably, I mean, he had a lot of stress on his shoulders and stuff. But yeah, when watching the fight, I was under the heavy influence, but and that's why I wanted to go back and watch, because as I watched it, every time that I could really sort of see it, Reyes was getting the better of exchanges. He was getting more devastating punches. I thought when Jones came forward, I wasn't seeing the typical Jones that was sort of exerting his will. I didn't think that Reyes looked banged up. So by the time that they ended and they read the decision, I remember just sort of thinking to myself, okay, maybe you didn't really get a good view of it. Because I, in my head, from when I overall sort of scored the whole match in my head, every time I could recall something, it was Reyes getting the better.
Right.
So in my head, I thought, oh, wow, Jones really is going to lose. And when they called Jones, then I just sort of immediately sort of doubted my own self. I was like, oh, maybe I missed something. Maybe I didn't. But I wasn't upset. But I also realized that I wasn't in the best frame of mind watching it.
But look, I'll tell you what. I felt the same way live. To me, live, it was very jarring to hear Jones's name called because – I mean, Reyes, especially early, man, was really taking it to him. I mean, really taking it to him.
Yeah.
Reyes didn't finish strong, but at the same time, it wasn't like Jones was working him in 4-5.
I was going to say that fifth round, I mean, a lot of times going in the fifth round, I imagine that whoever usually wins the fifth round sort of solidifies it. But I did feel like John was pushing a little bit more in the fifth, but I also didn't feel like it was a crazy round in his favor either. No.
But he wasn't hurting him.
Right. And that's why towards the end I was like, okay, maybe it was that fifth round. I was like, it did kind of lean more towards John. So I was like, okay, that's probably what got him the fight. But I wouldn't have been upset if Reyes did, because going into that decision, I thought he had did enough. But then not hearing it again, I was just like, okay, I should probably go back and watch it, because I'm probably missed something in that blur.
Industrial pain pills. Well, to me, again, watching it with the sound off, I think I like John Jones in round three. But it's one of those rounds where if you sit next to me like, John, I watched it right there with you. We could watch it right now. Turn on and watch it with the sound off, and you could look at me and be like, I hear what you're saying with Jones, but I think it's Reyes.
Yep.
And I can't fault you. It's so close.
Reyes should have kept it pushing on the fifth. You could see he pulled back.
He did.
He thought he did enough, and I think that was the difference where he, in his mind, already thought he had three locked down, and he should have pushed through the fifth.
Can't do that in a five-round fight.
And I think that's the point where when he didn't, and I already started seeing him ready to raise his hands, I was like, man, that's not a good look. And I always feel bad when fighters do that. So when he did that and then he didn't get the nod, I wasn't as surprised, because I felt like he should have did more in that fifth round.
I agree.
And if he would have kept pushing it and would have took the fifth, then he easily would have did it,
I know. You hate to – I mean, listen, he said afterwards, look, it was my first five-round fight. I wasn't sure how to manage the gas tank. I wasn't sure how to feel, And I agree. All those things are legit. I mean, that's why there were question marks around him. But you are right, man. I mean
– he still had more. You could tell he still had more to give.
That's right, and he didn't empty it all out, man.
He didn't, and that's the thing. I mean, you could tell he was tired, but you could tell that he still had, because he wasn't moving sluggish. And when he did make contact, you could tell he still had power.
Yep.
And he was still evading John. He was just moving. He was moving away from him. He wasn't pushing it to him. And I just felt like if he would have kept pushing it instead of just sort of sitting back, because it felt like he was sitting back. And that's I think that when judges see that, they're just like, okay, obviously this guy either looks tired or whatever. And And that last impression of a fighter pushing forward is always the one that they carry. So if there was any question marks going in that fifth, he did himself no favors by sort of taking that last half of the fifth round off.
I tell you what, though, I want to see the rematch. I want to see the rematch, man. And I don't usually say that. I mean, you know, the only other time
– a lot of people said Jones looked human. I mean, a lot of times he goes in there and he looks so superhuman. A lot of people now are just like, oh, okay, I'm not going to just immediately bet Jones after seeing this one, you know?
It's a fair point. I mean, you know, you think about the times he's really been tested. I mean, the first Gustafson fight, right? He was obviously very tested in that. I'll be honest. After that one, I wasn't clamoring for a rematch. I knew we'd see him fight again at some point. But I wasn't clamoring for a rematch because what I thought was Jones, you know, had a bad night, but he dug deep. He won it. I thought it was clear that he won that night. And he showed to me championship heart. And I'm like, you know what? These two guys will meet down the line somewhere. Thiago Santos, you know, Mejeta, to me, that fight was definitely close because I think John had to respect his power. But I don't know. To me, you know, Thiago was so hurt. I mean, he would stumble. Yeah. I mean, he would take two steps forward and stumble.
His body fought him the whole time.
That's it. So, you know, to me, I thought that was kind of a weird fight, and I didn't think immediately, like, I got to see this again right away. This one, I want to see again right away, man. I want that. There's not another fight I want to see. No disrespect to, you know, the combatants this weekend, Corey Anderson and Jan Blachowicz. I mean, it's a de facto number one contender type fight, but I got to be honest, I'm not clamoring to see either one of them fight. I wouldn't begrudge it. They're, you know, they have a right to get there. I know Corey Anderson. I like Corey a lot, man. I know he believes he deserves that shot, but I'm not clamoring for it. You know, the idea of John moving up to heavyweight, I don't know that, that does much for me either, especially after a fight that close. That fight was so close. I want to see it again, and I'm hoping. I know that, you know, Dana and the UFC team, they're not always keen on doing instant rematches, but man, I want to see it here.
And that's the thing. And it could go two different ways. We saw Jones versus Gustafson. The second one was completely different. Everybody thought it was going to be every bit as close as the first one was. Jones went back, processed what happened in that fight, and came back and looked 20 times better than he did in the first one and completely dominated him. That could happen again in this rematch. But there is the point where Reyes, kind of like when Conor fought Nate that first time, he was like, man, I had no idea of how the energy would feel differently, the bigger guys moving. But when Conor came back and fought that rematch, was able to process it and approach it differently, was even better. And that could happen with Reyes. Reyes can go back and say, okay, I've been there. I know what's different. I know what I need to do differently for the next time around. And he can come out and have his way. But Jones, I just happen to think that he's just one of these talents and one of these kind of guys that, as much as a rematch would benefit Reyes because he will be able to deal with it differently, I think we'll see a whole differently John Jones as well, because he realized what he was in there and what he'll need to do differently as well. And Jones, man, when he comes in focused, when he comes in knowing what he needs to do, is as dangerous as anybody has ever been in the octagon.
So that seems to be one of the big questions, right, is what do we take out of John Jones, you know, this performance and his recent performances? Where does he still stand at this moment? Earlier this week, Rashad Evans was on.
I think
on.
He took him a little lightly.
He might have. He might
as
have.
As much as he said he didn't, but I think some of the mind games and some of the stuff coming in, I think he wants to portray like he's not caught up in his head and other stuff. I just, part of me thinks that he didn't give Reyes as much credit as he probably should have, and I don't think John will make that same mistake.
If that's the case, he definitely won't make the same mistake if that's what happened. All right, so Rashad Evans was on the JRE MMA show, Joe Rogan's MMA-specific show. I will say, if you haven't listened to this episode and you want to go listen to it, it's about 2% MMA talk, and it's about 98%.
Weed?
Even more. Hallucinogenics, man. I did not know, to be honest, that Rashad Evans has gotten really into mushrooms.
Really?
Yeah, and really into in fact, he's helping Johns Hopkins do research on it. I mean, he's like super into this stuff, man. It's actually pretty interesting, man. Wow. I mean, obviously Rashad was always a smart guy and an interesting guy to talk to, and now his life has taken him in a completely different direction. And he does relate it to fighting. He relates it to the end of his career and his fighting career, I should say, at least. Mm-hmm. It's some interesting talk. But that's pretty cool. He has one little clip right here about John Jones specifically that I thought was especially interesting. So I wanted to play this. This is Rashad Evans speaking to Joe Rogan and talking about John Jones.
The difference between a champion, you know, is about it more than anybody, between a champion and a good fighter is so close. It's so close.
It is.
And sometimes it's that fucking fire, that anger, that fear, that drive inside of you to be elite, to be the best. And sometimes that comes with every practice you have to win, everything you have to do, every fucking training session. You have to burn it out. If you don't, you feel like you're less than you could be.
Yeah, I agree with that. But there's also the other side of that, too, where there's that blissful ignorance. And that blissful ignorance is where you just go out and do something and you do it 100% great all the time just mm-hmm. because you enjoy it. And there's not right. the pressure of, oh, I have to do it a certain kind of way. Like, for instance, when John Jones was first competing, John Jones, he competed so freely because, you know, it was just like it was just in his nature. Like, he was just so creative and he fought different because of, you know, he fought from that place of just creativity, that ignorance, that ignorant bliss. You know, he couldn't be beat. He didn't believe he can be beat. And, you know, he would fight that way and he would do some genius stuff in there just because of that, you know. But then when you have those experiences where you know you've been caught in a fight or you've made some mistakes in there, then you do know better. But then those thoughts, it actually slows you down a bit too, because you're not fully reacting. You're thinking a mm-hmm. hair, where before it was just kind of like a reaction.
Yeah, I talk about his opening fight, the opening sequence of his fight with Shogun. I mean, he's 23 years old, he's fighting for the world title, and he opens up with a flying knee.
Right.
Who the fuck does that?
That was dumb and young.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the best way to say it. But at the same time, that blissful ignorance, that was his blueprint for so long, you mm-hmm. know, and he's turned it into a whole fighting style, just that, you know, letting it off, hang out, letting it fly. And that's what worried me. That's why I thought in this fight with Dominic Reyes, it was going to be a closer fight, because of the fact that Dominic Reyes now had that, what John used to have, being that blissful ignorance. Mm-hmm. He didn't really know how much, you know, how better John was, or didn't even care. He was just kind of like, oh, I can win. You know what I'm saying? He was so confident in himself, almost in an ignorant, blissful way, but it worked out for him, you know?
All right. So I thought it a couple of interesting points there and the key words, I think, that Rashad said, the blissful ignorance. You know, I obviously you were laid up in a hospital bed at the time, but, you know, I was talking about it kind of coming in, that I thought one of the things that would help Dominic a little bit was the fact that he just doesn't know what he doesn't know. You know what I mean? He doesn't know that he's not supposed to compete with John Jones, and I thought that's exactly the way he came in there. But then there's the flip side of it as well, that John Jones – you know, I think everybody's trying to figure out, like, has this guy deteriorated? Or are we seeing a guy who's past his prime, who, as you said, is now human, you know, where he hasn't been human before? And I wonder, too, you know, physically, you know, he's not an old guy by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
Because he started so young. But I wonder how much of it is almost like mental. Like, he doesn't have that freedom anymore. You know, this dude has cashed every check you can cash in terms of, you know, potentially screwing up your career and remaining on top. You know, even Dana after the fights were like, you know, most stories don't turn out this way. Most stories, you know, most guys that live the way he has lived and does what he does, it ends up bad. And here this guy is, you know, still on top of the world. And I wonder how much of that plays into it. Like, is he really deteriorating, or really seeing a downfall? Or is this, you know, kind of some, you know, a big mental kind of a hurdle for him? And the other thing, too, is, you know, I thought it was so interesting in the buildup that John, during fight week, was saying, listen, I don't think anybody is going to be able to beat some of these records that I've set as far as being the youngest champion, as far as this many title defenses, because he was saying how the game is changing, like how much better everybody is getting now. Like, there are, you know, nobody has these weaknesses anymore. They all have the whole game, you know. And I don't know, just hearing him say that, as you said, himself kind of admitting to being human or whatever, to being not necessarily head and shoulders above everybody else, I still feel like the physical tools are there. I just feel like maybe it's it's kind of a psychological approach as much as anything.
And you're right. I think there's a point where he even has to realize that for the longest point, he was just enjoying himself. He was just having fun. And then I think even a couple years back when he really started training, he started believing the fact that, you know, and he didn't even say as much. He's like, guys, I don't even train. I don't even like to train. You know, he was just physically adept at just being able to just destroy people. Mm-hmm. But I think he realizes, too, that physicality is only going to get you so far. And now you have the people that are coming in the sport, one, are physical freaks of nature, but are also starting training at such an early age that the guys that are coming up now are just unbelievable.
Yep.
So at some point, records will be getting broke. So, I mean, it's good for him to, you know, sort of realize that, you know, he was able to set some crazy records and do some crazy things at a young point in his life. But at some point, that stuff will change. It will go away. But I think as he starts to realize that, he's thinking more of what needs to happen. I think the game has changed for him. I think it's become a lot more serious for him now. Mm-hmm. You know, something he realized that he needs to kind of work a lot more.
Yes.
So it'd be interesting to see, because I think he's at a point where he now really needs to decide, does he still enjoy it as much as when he was blissfully ignorant,
yeah.
You know, if you will, because now he has to think, and he's not just going to go in there and just starch guys anymore. And I think that's what we saw with Reyes, who, you're right, who kind of went in there. But I think even Anthony Smith had the same sort of mentality as well. A guy that had a lot of experience, but also was like, I'm just going to go in and have fun, you know. Like, most people don't think I'm even supposed to be here.
Right.
You know, but so anything I do is going to be better than what most people expect, you know. So now we had Reyes, another guy that probably a lot of people are like, who's this guy coming in here, you know, and that's doing the stuff.
He was the unknown challenger.
He was the unknown challenger. But, I mean, when you look at what he was able to do, if you don't know who he is now or understand you know what he's kind of capable, but those guys are gonna be keeping more guys like that are gonna keep coming, and it's just gonna be tougher now for Jones, because he realizes now that he can't just get by on his pure physicality. I mean, his physicality is pretty fucking mind-blowing,
right?
Though, I mean, that his physicality and what he's able to do with his body, it's funny you look at him, because his legs are not like these huge, thick legs. A lot of people think, you know, they look kind of undersized for his torso and his top body. But the way he's able to generate speed and power from his frame is still going to help him be able to carry over against a lot of individuals if they're not doing the right work on their end. But unfortunately for John, a lot of the guys coming up are doing that work. If you're making it to the top of the game like this, these guys are doing the work. So same thing with, like, Corey Anderson, a lot of these other guys in there. They're doing the work. Like, John's not just going to just drop these guys like he used to be able to do, because the guys are much more physical. They're in much better shape. And I don't know. I mean, maybe not like John's slowing down or that he's losing power, but at some point, you know, John will plateau as well.
Has to.
It's
going to
happen. It happens to everybody, you know, and when that point happens, we're going to start seeing some real sort of interesting fights, because then it will come down to where's John's head and where his heart's at in these fights, and how much does he want to push himself in these fights. And I think a lot of these fights, a lot of people have questioned that, because he's just, it came so easy for him.
Right.
That Gustafson fight was one of the first fights where people saw John had to dig deep, and he had to dig real deep. And this fight with Reyes was another one of those fights where if he didn't have that sort of champion's mentality and he didn't know that he needed to push through in that fifth, he could have easily lost that fight.
Right.
But he has that heart. He has that mind behind him. But it's going to be interesting going forward. And that's what I said about earlier about how John looks more human now, because we've seen it.
Definitely.
We've seen it to where he has to battle himself out. He has to pull things out. And for so long, it's looked so easy for him. And maybe it's just at that point going forward, it's going to be hard for him to kind of replicate what he was able to do before, because he made it look so easy. But with the level of talent that's coming up, and for the fact that, you know, it's got to be tough to be 100% example of the best thing out there every fight. Not everybody's going to look like that every time.
Well, I always said one of the reasons I liked the Gustin fight so much was because, to me, that showed championship heart, that John was able to pull out a victory on a night that he didn't have his best stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And to me, like, that's meaningful. Like, you're right. You can't dominate everybody. But when you're having a bad night and you still find a way to win, to me, that's admirable. Yeah. You know what I mean? And
that's the champion. That's the championship level stuff
that's
right
it.
There. You know?
That's it. Well, I'll tell you what I'm anxious to see. I hope that they do one. And have you watched this program Detail on ESPN Plus?
No, yeah, I remember talking about
it. Oh, it's so good. I'm telling you right now, Daniel Cormier does it. And the first, as soon as I mention this, the first thing I want to do is I want to apologize to Matt Wells, obviously a fellow MMA journalist. Him and I were talking about this, I don't know, man, like last summer, I guess, was when the San Antonio show was. And at the time, I was not a fan of the show because it opens up. I mean, it was a Kobe Bryant concept. Shout out to Kobe. Obviously, that's incredibly relevant in the news. But it was a Kobe Bryant concept. And it opens up by saying, you know, this is not meant to entertain. This is not meant for debate. And I was like, ah, okay. But to me, it was weird. When I first started watching it, I was like, it just didn't grab me. But you have to be in the right frame of mind. It's not meant to entertain. Like it's literally just film breakdown and tape breakdown. But man, Cormier is so damn good at it and the intricacies of it. Man, they did. He just did one on Shevchenko's performance, which was phenomenal. I mean,
so
obviously
they're still cranking him out.
He's still doing them actively. Okay. He did one, and now they're doing them more frequently. So they did one on Conor's performance. It's worth it to watch. It's worth it to watch the Conor Cerrone one. Because he breaks it down in such detail for such a short fight. Not detail, hence the name of it. For such a short fight. But what's amazing.
ESPN Plus?
ESPN Plus. But what's amazing about the Conor fight is you see that, when he comes out of the gate and misses that first left hand, that big left hand, his follow through of his body as Cerrone tries to duck in and change levels, his leg ends up inadvertently. I mean, I say inadvertently. Maybe he meant to throw it in that direction. But it looked like he was a little bit off balance, and it was his fall through. But it hit Cerrone in the temple. And so, like, he was – you know, everybody talks about the shoulder strikes. He was already rocked. He was rocked from the fall through that first one. So, anyway, Cormier does such a phenomenal job at breaking things down. I hope that they do one on this fight because, it would take a lot longer.
I wonder because I wonder if some people think he'd just be picking on
I know. That's the only thing. I wonder if they won't do it because this is your rival or whatever. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't want to sit there and extol the greatness of, look at what John does here. This is so phenomenal.
But if there was a guy that was going to be willing to do it, I think Daniel could do that.
Yeah, because he doesn't have that ego.
Because he doesn't have the ego, that same thing. But I can see where somebody might be like, oh, you're just going to shit on him. And he might just
not even
want to deal with it.
I think he would be.
If there was a guy out there that would be fair enough to do it, I think Daniel's man enough.
Oh, I know he would. Especially knowing that the next chapter of his life is going to be about analysis, not fighting. But anyway, I want to see it because, I don't necessarily feel that there's a deterioration of skills to a huge degree at this point.
No, not at all.
All right. The other story that really this event was about judging and not just the main event. In fact, I mean, yes, the 4-1 score was a bit difficult to stomach. But
it was weird.
It was okay, but and I guess I'm just trying to qualify it a little bit. I mean, when Joe Silva, one of the most educated people in the history of the sport on the sport, says I gave round 2 a 10-10, then that at least gives you some credence that maybe somebody could see round 2 for Jones. I don't see it. Round 3 was obviously very close. And, of course, 4-5, I think most people believe Jones won. So I guess it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, but it did stick out as a little bit weird. But it wasn't just that one.
10-10, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was a little odd, too. But, you know, it's not just about that fight. It's about some of the other decisions on the night. I mean, James Krause not winning round 1 of that fight. I mean, that's utterly ridiculous. I just don't understand that. And there were a couple other really tight ones. I mean, Jonathan Martinez, I thought he won his fight. There were some rough decisions. So I guess the two things that I want to say on this. First, I'm glad that this is an ongoing discussion. That is good stuff. Second, let me just say that the story about this judge that wasn't paying attention, man, Joe Rogan, I mean, we obviously just played a clip from one of his shows. I respect the hell out of him, man. This guy has as much knowledge and passion as anybody. He has done so much to help grow the sport. But he made a mistake. He made a mistake on the broadcast by pointing out a judge that he said wasn't watching the fight. And it turns out, you know, that was not a judge. I mean, if you go back and watch the tape, and I did watch the tape. Yeah, I forgot you've been in a hospital bed. You didn't even know all this story. So yeah, it's funny. So he points out a judge. He's like, we're watching a judge that's not watching the fight during the prelims, during the Lauren Murphy and Andrea Lee fight. And it's not a judge. It's a commission official that he's referring to. It's very clear that the judge at that point is watching the fight. And unfortunately, it never got corrected anywhere. And even if you did correct it on the broadcast – the clips are still going to go out there, right? I mean, he is such a powerful voice. I contend that at this point, Joe Rogan is the most powerful voice in mixed martial arts. I think more powerful than Dana White at this point, because I think a lot of people do realize that Dana is a promoter, and of course, everything he says is going to be slanted towards promoting UFC events. Joe Rogan doesn't have those responsibilities, so he's able to say what he wants and flavor things the way he wants and be a little bit more honest, I would say. I think he's the most powerful voice. I mean, maybe you could say Conor McGregor has a more powerful voice, but I mean, Conor's not talking about issues in the sport and that sort of thing. So I think Joe Rogan has the most powerful voice in the sport. I think he made a mistake here, and that happens. We all make mistakes. We all say things that are wrong. I hate seeing the fact that then that became such a story that people were like, well, of course the judging was bad. There's, you know, the judge wasn't even watching the fight.
Yeah.
That's not the case. We do need to do some things about judging, but it's not find judges that will actually watch the fight. I mean, they were watching the fight. So yeah. I think that was
unfortunate. That's weird he didn't go back and clarify that, if that's the
I think
case.
John Anik tried to. He said, I'm not sure. I think probably the truck probably told him, hey, that's not a judge. But it just never really got like, oh, my bad, yeah. I'm sorry.
That at that point, it's already out there. And you're right, there's a lot of people that Joe is. I mean, I love listening to him comment on some of the fights, but I know – at times, his biases will come out there, and you know. But you have to be smart enough to kind of know when to sort of take it for face value or whatever. But he does add some input. But there are a lot of people out there who live and breathe. I mean, dude has a killer, crazy following. His podcast is awesome.
Number one in the world.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can see where you have to kind of watch what is said, because there are going to be people that immediately drink the Kool-Aid.
That's it.
And jump on
it's
the
just accepted as fact. And that's what bothers me a little bit. Yeah. You know, like I don't even know if he understands the power that he has in that way, that if he says something, it is immediately accepted as fact by a huge portion of the fandom. And that's dangerous, because there is a discussion that needs to be had about judging. I'm glad to see it's going on. Yeah. I'm not a fan of open scoring that a lot of people have brought up. We wrote a column about it on MMA Junkie, where each of us kind of chimed in a little bit. So if you want to read more on there about why I'm not a fan of it, there's a triple take on there is what it's called, is open scoring. You know, the solution, you can read it. I'll put my portion on Patreon.
Whoa.
So that way, if you just want to read my portion, you don't have to search it down. You can just go to patreon.com. But there are things that need to be happened. And
yeah.
I wanted to play one other clip for you this week. John McCarthy, big John McCarthy, obviously was on MMA Tonight, which is on SiriusXM. And you're actually going to hear Anthony Smith ask him a question. You mentioned Anthony Smith earlier. He's actually doing some radio hosting as well.
No, good for him.
And he asks a pretty simple question. What is the solution? You know, we're talking about the problem. We're talking about what the issue is. What's the solution? I mean, how can you question John McCarthy's expertise? And here's what he had to say.
So what's the answer here? I mean, we got the godfather of the sport here. What do we do? Because you're right, the commissions are locking us out. They've held it all off, and they want to make the decisions, but they're not the ones that are in there, like with these life-changing results. Dominic Reyes lost out, in my opinion, on the biggest life-changing event probably of his entire life, because he may not ever get that back. He may not be able to. John Jones is hard to beat once, let alone twice. So now John Jones has got 25 minutes of data on Dominic Reyes. He's not going to have the same jump on him that he had this time. So from a commission standpoint, or from just a sport as a whole, if you had to pick two things that you think would change the game for us completely, what would those two things be?
I'll tell you, the first thing, and this is going to get me in a lot of trouble, so thank you very much for bringing that question.
That's what I'm here for, brother.
I got to tell you the truth. The first thing is this. All of these commissions out there, there's good ones and there's bad ones. I'm just going to flat out say it that way. And if you work with them, you know which ones are good and you know which ones are bad. But none of them, they are all kingdoms unto themselves, if you understand what I'm saying. There's a king sitting in each one, and they can decide to do what they want in their own little kingdom. That has to change. When you have an organization like the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports, and it's all of those commissions coming together to create the rules and what they believe is right for these sports. But when they vote on something and they agree, yes, this is what's best for the sports, that individual commission right now is going back and saying, no, we're not going to do what they said. We want to be different. And they are ruining our sport. They are causing us a problem. Texas is one of those commissions. Texas has not done what they were supposed to do. They have not changed the rules. They have not done the things that will help fighters. And here is what happens. So that's the biggest thing. Right now, someone has got to put it into play where if you are a member of the ABC, you are a commission, and you're an athletic commission within, I don't care if you want to say the United States, North America. We also have Brazil as part of the ABC in South America. But if you are part of the ABC, which you must be if you're in the United States, I'm just going to say that too, and it is voted on that this is the way the sport is going to be run, you do not have the ability to say, oh, no, I'm going to do it my own way. And sometimes I guess that could work against what is right, but I don't think it is in the long run with the way the ABC is set up and the people that they have making rules and regulations, decisions right now. It's the right way. It's what it should be. And, you know, that is the major thing. You can't have these people that get to be on their own island and decide we're going to be different, because that's what Texas is. And this is what you get.
All right, so of course John McCarthy is respected as they come when it comes to knowledge in the space. And I like what he's saying in the fact that, to me, and we can argue about the system, man. We can talk about 10-point must. We can talk about open scoring. We can talk about all these different things. But to me, it's the people implementing the systems. And the fact that we have all these commissions not on the same page,
yeah,
it's not right, man. And I've heard arguments against why a federal governing body isn't a good thing, but I'm starting to believe that, I don't know, maybe it doesn't have to be a federal governing body, but we have this Association of Boxing Commissions, Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports, I believe it's now called, but if they can't all agree that they're on the same page, then what the hell's the point of even having it? I mean, I guess the medical databases are shared, and that's a good thing. I mean, that's a positive. Everybody has access to the same medical databases. Good. We're not allowing suspended fighters who are either, you know, just knocked out or got drug tested somewhere. We're not allowing them to go fight somewhere else in the States. Okay, that's a positive. But the fact that they can't all have the same rule sets, I mean, we change it from and judging criteria. And, dude, come on, man. They got to get it together. And this year, the annual meeting is in Sacramento in July, and I'm hoping we can be there. It's not exciting, at least me, man. It's not the most exciting thing to attend. It's not, you know, big over-the-top entertainment value, but luckily, Sacramento is not a very expensive area. You can go there relatively cheaply. We could probably do some interviews while we're out there. I mean, there's some MMA gyms out there. You got, of course, the Team Alpha Male crew. You got the MMA Gold crew out there. I mean, we could do some interviews. So maybe we could make it all worthwhile. But I would like to cover the commission meetings, because John was pretty vicious there, but he's 100% accurate, man. These people are not on the same page, and it's like this. It's like a political game. You know what I mean? It's like a political game and a power game, and that's got to stop, man. I mean, it does tend to ruin the sport, man. You know what I mean? It's not – if the whole point of the commissions or as they say, is to have the fighters' best interest in mind. If that's what they're there for, if they're there to protect the fighters, to have fighters' best interest at heart, then how can they make the decisions they make and say that's not true? That's not accurate. So I don't know. I hope this discussion, because it's been a week-long discussion, and that's good. I hope it continues on, because changes need to be made. And I don't know if it's to the system itself. I think it's to the people overseeing it.
And I would even just as much as – I mean, I know there's – when it comes down to the breakdown of the scoring and the criteria and all that other stuff, I think in the meantime they could probably just implement some changes that we've heard people talk that would just – Why is it that we're waiting to the very end to hear any bit of where the judges' minds have been up to that point? I mean, they write down the scores after every round. If we can't just get a tally of where they're at after a round, just so people have an understanding, it might not – I mean, so then we don't have to – even if it's just like, okay, we didn't see an active point or a score from when that strike happened or whatever. I mean, I get it. The technical side of that stuff can be a little bit tougher for them to sort of show, but just if you know at the end of a round,
a little something,
even if you just know at the end of the round, okay, we can clearly see that these three judges are in our favor. We know for sure we have this round in the bag. So the second round, the other fighter know that he's going to come out harder. The first fighter is going to go out there and try to secure
round. I don't like the open scoring, though. I don't like the open score. I thought you were just saying, like, I just want
to know what it is going in after every round. I don't need this, the exact breakdown of, you know, why it's this. Just let me know who's winning after each round.
Well, see, I don't, and as I explained in my piece, which you were in a hospital bed, so I forgive you for not reading. I think there's a lot of arguments against that being implemented, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think there's arguments against it. But I do what I like what you're saying there. What I do like is an explanation of the score. You know what I mean? Like some notes. You know, okay, yeah. Cool. 10-9. Why? Give me a little something. Give me 5 words. Give me 10 words. Give me what? Well,
one part
word.
Of that would they would need more time.
They would need more time. They would need definitely more time. Especially because you see it cage side when they're collecting, like. They're
down to the minute.
An official has to run around the cage and catch it. And like, literally, if you're in that first seat, like, literally the bell sounds and they want your piece of paper right there. So I do. It may take a little more time. But I don't know. Just knowing that, like if an official has a score and they can stand behind it, they can explain to you, I may say I disagree with you, but at least I know that, like, you've got some logic and you're thinking about something.
Well, that there should be some sort of thing. I mean, I don't see why they can't. Most of these judges – I don't know if they're doing back-to-back or if they do a fight and then they get a break. If they have a break after the fight, it makes sense that they would be able to go back and then clarify why they scored it, sort of a brain dump of why they did it.
Right.
But it just feels like we don't need to have it to the point of where we're finding out who won after this long commercial break. I feel like there's a way that we could probably know going into the commercial break already where the judges have sort of.
Then you lose the drama of the read of the. I mean, come on, that's one of the most exciting parts.
It is. Well, it is, but I think you would take that end excitement and you would spread it back out over the things because you would know going in each round. All right, this fighter's down. They're going to have to come. I mean, we already kind of know when a fighter's down, and I think so. We're always like, oh, okay, this guy's going to go. But it's always interesting when you hear. You watch a fight and you're like, oh, clearly that was so-and-so round. And then you hear the corner like, oh, yeah, baby, that was yours. And you're like, what are you watching, brother? Like, no, that wasn't, you know. I just feel like the fighters would fight a lot differently if they knew exactly where they sort of stood going into it. So, yeah, it would take maybe the drama, but I think they could still find a way to still make the read exciting for some particular reason or whatever. But I don't know.
I'll refer to you to my triple take, sir. Go to patreon.com/MMAroadshow.
Yeah, I'll subscribe to the Patreon and read that.
we'll lay it out there for you. All right, listen, it feels like we're doing an and a half right now, but man, I didn't get to do one. Well, first of all, there was no way you were going to be able to produce it. You were loopy in a hospital. Well, by that time you were out of the hospital, but you're still loopy
still
nonetheless.
Loopy.
Me, I barely got to the airport in time, but I'm glad the discussion continued. I'm glad we got to get that off our chest.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was good fights. I do want to. I do. That did remind me. I want to go back. It's so funny because we're already like middle of next fight week. But I did remind that reminded me that I did want to go back and watch the fights again. But here we are already like pre-fight interviews for these fights. The fights are coming up. I mean, that's the thing about this fucking train that we're on. It just never
relentless.
Ends. Never ends.
It's relentless.
It really doesn't end.
UFC on ESPN Plus 25 is this weekend. Matt Erickson is out there. It takes place Saturday night. The Santa Ana Star Center in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, which is basically Albuquerque. It's a it's a suburb of Albuquerque. Corey Anderson versus Jan Blachowicz in the main event. Key light heavyweight contest there. It's a little bit frustrating because like those two guys really deserve a look and they really do deserve an opportunity to talk about being a number one contender.
Yeah.
Of course, with the continued fallout of UFC 247, they're stuck, you know, kind of in the shadows of that. But both these guys are, I mean, they're both super nice, super polite, super cool people, but they're just not, neither one of them are big talkers.
Yeah.
Neither one of them are big promoters. You know what I mean? Like, they're kind of the, they're probably two of the most reserved, quiet people in the light heavyweight division.
Yeah, Corey's certainly doing a better job.
He is doing a better job lately.
Of calling his shots and asking for what he wants. I mean, I think if one of these guys goes in there and has just completely starches his opponent, I don't think Dana would pass up the opportunity to give them the next shot instead of going back, as much as we'd like to see that Reyes fight. Because we've seen it happen time and time again. You know, it's that last impression on Dana's and the matchmaker's minds. If one of these guys goes in there and puts on an absolute just barnstorming performance and then calls out Jones at the end, I don't see them not getting the shot. I
agree. It's got to be – it's but they got to make a statement. They got to go do something.
If it's just a ho-hum five rounds, then – yeah, nobody's.
You go back to Reyes, right?
I mean, if it's probably go back to Reyes.
I think so too. I think Dominic Reyes right now is sitting around watching this fight, going, "Please be boring as hell."
Yeah.
Because if it is, I don't know why. I mean, if somebody lays and prays or just you know clinches their way to a victory, I mean, I understand that counts, but
yep.
How could you?
I don't know. I'm torn both ways because I always we know that the UFC wants their. They're promoters, and they want to promote the hot item. I can see where part of them is like, man, Jones, we need Jones to keep winning. We need Jones to be the superstar because Jones draws a heck of a lot better. No offense to Jan or Corey, but, you know, even though those guys, if they're able to get the belt, I mean, like, who is Dana and those guys going to rather promote? I mean, Jones has the look. He's got the swagger. I mean, the crowd absolutely adores him. I can almost see where the UFC is like, fuck, we don't want to throw Reyes back at him right now. We need Jones to get back in there and have another dominating victory.
There's something to that.
You know?
There's something to that.
It really is. And you hate to think of it that way, but we all realize, and everybody listening to this realizes as well, I mean, this is not a lot of times one versus two versus three versus four. It's the number one against the other hot item, the hot guy coming up. And for one of these guys to get that next shot, they need to go in there and absolutely just starch the opponent because – and maybe they don't because maybe the UFC just doesn't want to test Jones, realizing how close this last one was. They might not want to go right back to the well on that one because they realize, no offense to Dominic, that I just think that when people come in there and want to look for who's going to move the needle more – it's going to be John Jones as opposed to Dominic Reyes, you know, and I think Reyes is an awesome, incredible individual, you know, but, you know, the UFC is going to have to do a heck of a job to build that story up behind him, whereas Jones' story is already out there.
It's true.
He's already this hot item. So I just don't know if Dana, as much as they might try to whatever, as much as people say, hey, that was a close fight, we need to see that back. Part of me thinks that that's the last thing the UFC wants to do right now is to run that one back.
It's interesting, man. I mean, you're right. You know, it's like, do you want to make the instant play or do you want to spread it out a little bit?
You kind of spread it out and get some more, get those John Jones, you know, promotion dollars. Get the word behind them. I mean, there's no discounting the fact that when you go to a press conference and John Jones is there, outside of like when Connor's there or something, nobody gets a bigger pop than Jones.
True.
I mean, when Cormier, I mean, for some reason, the fucking crowd just hated, loved to just boo on him, you know? And even though when it came to the story, like, here was the Jones who had gotten in trouble and did all these things, Daniel did everything right, But Daniel got the boos.
True.
And John got the cheers. I mean, they absolutely, the crowd just loves Jones. And the UFC realized, I mean, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of effort to build these guys up to the superstar status. So there's part of them, I guarantee, that doesn't want Jones to lose right now. And we've seen that with Connor as well. I mean, Connor had, for the longest time, very favorable matchmaking. And there are a lot of people that will say that. You know, that's just not a hot take saying, like, oh, you know, I mean, he
no,
he had,
they gave he passed the test.
He passed the test, and he had some tough ones.
But
there were some guys that they were
they
like.
They managed him the right way. They did a great job of building him up. No question. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I just, part of me is thinking the last thing I want to do is give Jones another super hard test. I can see where they almost would rather take the winner of this. And they'll just sell it the fact that, oh, that's just keeping the division moving. We don't want to hold the division down. We don't want it to get stagnant.
That would be an easy sell, right?
It's super easy sell. You're just sell like that.
Guys, I mean, listen, Reyes looked good, no question. Yep. But he had a shot. We can't cost these guys. You know, how long's Anderson been going at me? You know, how long? You're right. It's a super easy sell. You can already see that.
Super,
right.
Super easy.
Yep.
It's gonna happen.
I can say it.
But we need that. We need them to. They do need to show up, because that's the kind of thing. Remember, until Johnny Walker got handed that loss, he was gonna skip everybody.
Yep.
Because he was the hot item. You know. So that's how fickle this sport is. And unfortunately, when they do the matchmaking, oftentimes the number one guy that should be getting the shot is just not getting the shot.
It's interesting. I hadn't thought about that way. All right, listen, we'll get to the co-main in just a second. I want to look, a lot of people, and it's hard, man. It's a fight night 1 week after a big pay-per-view with controversial results and all that. So I understand. I feel like this card is getting no love whatsoever. To me, I think it's actually pretty damn entertaining, to be honest with you.
It's,
I mean,
good fighters.
The night starts out with Mark De La Rosa versus Holly and Paiva. Mark De La Rosa, of course, is fighting on the same card as his wife, Montana De La Rosa, is fighting on the main card. He's fighting in the prelims. Interesting dynamic there to see how that pans out. Now, we saw a similar situation in Bellator just a few weeks back. A little different there. You know, the athletes, the married fighters were fighting in back-to-back fights, which I don't know. In some ways,
these guys usually corner each other, too.
They do. They corner each other, and you kind of wonder how much, you know, at least with the Kings, they were fighting back to back, and so I think they were probably like warming up at the same time, getting ready at the same time. I mean, you got to wonder, like, what kind of energy dump is Montana De La Rosa going to have fighting on the main card.
Typically,
with her husband fighting?
She wouldn't even be there at the same time.
That's right.
So if she's going to corner him, she's going to have to get bust over there early.
Boy, that's such a great point. You're right.
That's tough for her.
She wouldn't even normally be at the arena.
I could see her totally doing that and cornering, because it's just the way that they work things out. Yeah. But, yeah, she's going to be putting extra stress on herself, because normally she wouldn't even take that bus.
Such a great point. Like, ideally, if you were, like, let's say you were managing both fighters, right? You don't have ties to them outside of them just being fighters. I mean, I guess you would have ties to them. You manage them. You probably have a relationship. But what I'm saying is, if you were just talking about the fighter, Montana De La Rosa, you would say, listen, I know your husband's fighting. Forget about it. Don't turn the TV on.
Yep.
Don't turn Fight Pass on or ESPN Plus. You stay here. You relax. You get in your mindset. You go over to the arena when it's time for the main card to go to the arena. Not until then. That's what ideally you would want her to do. But you know you can't ask a wife or a husband to do that, like to abandon
cornered,
their spouse.
I think
that
she's
way.
Cornered in the last couple
absolutely
fights. I can
she
remember.
Does.
She's always in his corner.
She absolutely does. So,
it's probably part of it too. I wonder if too. I mean, like, fighters are superstitious. Fighters know who works for them. And it's worked well for him having her in his corner. So I can see where they're like, we're not going to change this.
Yep.
You know, I need to be there. But it is going to put some extra stress on her for sure, especially if things don't go his way. I mean, that's got to be a huge emotional
dump. Either you
get
that nice rush or you get that dump, you know what I mean? So to me, that's just a very intriguing way to start things out. Macy Chesson had the loss last time out. Like, she's wanting to bounce back. By the way, man, our buddy Saif Saud saw him in Houston, Fortis MMA, went 0-3 that night.
That was a rough night.
Rough night for him. It was funny. I was leaving the hotel at about 4:30 in the morning to go to the airport. Hadn't been to sleep yet. Obviously was working all the way until it's time to go. Walked out of my room to go catch the Uber, and Saif was like literally just like pacing in the hallways, and he was like, I'll walk you down, bro. Like, he was just, man, it was so I mean, Fortis MMA is not used to having nights like that, 0-3. So he was, he was distraught.
Yeah, I felt for him. And Safe's a good dude. He reached out from that night or from down there and was like, oh, I found out what you were going through. So I thought it was nice that he sent a little shout out. And I wanted to write him that night, but I was like, the last thing he needs is another person trying to chime in and say something, because I knew he was having a rough night. I mean, he's so emotionally involved with his fighters. I mean, and I think that's why they do so well, you know. But yeah, I felt really bad
because
he
gives his all to them.
That was a tough night for Fortis.
So there you go. This could be Macy Chisholm's chance to try to win it back. I mean, get her own personal revenge to a degree, and also something for the team as well. Mirab Dvalishvili, I'm just a huge fan of Mirab Dvalishvili, one of the nicest dudes you'll ever meet. But he's got a tough one with Casey Kinney. That is a spectacular prelim fight. And as you make your way up, I mean, Holtzman versus Jim Miller. I mean, we always love Hot Sauce, of course. He's such a good dude. But Jim Miller, man, the veteran going at it, man. Still, you know, still doing it. John Dodson versus Nathaniel Wood. Crossroad type of fight there, man. John Dodson, of course, you know, he's had some setbacks. He's trying to prove he still belongs. Nathaniel Wood, a guy that people are very, very high on, had a nice winning streak going, had a little setback with an injury. Now he's back in action. Tim Means is in there as well. So, I mean, the prelims to me, again, I understand why we're not saying superstars, but the prelims to me are fun. And then you kick it over the main card. Yancy Medeiros and Lando Venata, like, kicking things off.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
That's going to be a sick fight. Ray Borg, love Ray Borg, and you know all that he's been through. But Rogério Bontorin is no joke. That is going to be a tough fight for Ray Borg there. You got Brock Weaver against Kazula Vargas. Brock Weaver, that guy is fun as hell. He was actually at the UFC in Houston in full. Obviously, he has a Native American heritage, and he was wearing like full Native American garb, and he representing his tribe. So that was cool. Then, as you said, you get to the Mara Romero Barella fight against Montana De La Rosa. Where's her head at? Where's her body at? How things are going to be going at that point? I mean, so to me, just a lot of really, really intriguing fights. And then you get to the co-main event, which I am super intrigued by. Diego Sanchez fighting in New Mexico, his native New Mexico. Excited to do that against Michelle Pajeda, who is just an absolute madman, right? An absolute showman, one of the most exciting people to watch, but also certainly has a tendency to gas out. Certainly is not unbeatable, as his record would suggest, and as his time in the UFC would suggest. But anytime you have a Diego Sanchez fight week, that means you get a Diego Sanchez interview. And it was Matt Erickson who had the pleasure to record this one. He was out in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, earlier today, actually. And part of me wanted to, like, you know, trim this down and make it like a highlight and that sort of thing. But first of all, Diego doesn't need a lot of questions, okay? Like, basically, you just kind of stick a mic in front of him and you go, Diego, I'm recording. And let him go. You know what I mean? But I love Diego, man. He is a madman. He is such a unique character. And, I mean, now he's got this crazy coach with him. And I don't know, man. But it just... it wouldn't be a Diego Sanchez fight week if we didn't hear from Diego Sanchez. So here's Diego Sanchez.
Is it good to be back fighting at home for the first time in a while?
Yeah, it's Albuquerque. The fight might be in Rio Rancho, but it's Albuquerque, Nuevo Mexico to me. And on this land, I'm undefeated. Since the age of 12 years old, I've been in the streets to the wrestling mats, to winning state championships, to winning the King of the Cage out there on that Santa Ana land. It's been a great track record for me. And, you know, when you come fight me here in Albuquerque, you're not only fighting Diego Sanchez, you're fighting the desert. You're fighting the high altitude of 5,000 feet. You're fighting the dry air that just gives you those chapped lips and that dry throat. You're fighting the elements.
As the years have gone by and you haven't been able to fight here, I mean, is that something that you kind of longed for and said, God, I wish they would come back here so I could do it again?
You know, the last time that I fought here was 2014. And in 2014, I was in a different place than I am now. And I made a decision. I chose to fight. I chose to during the fight here at home in 2014, I chose to stay at my house. I said, well, you know, this is an advantage. I get my own comfortable bed. You know, I don't have to sleep in a hotel. You know, I'll do the weight cut in my own hot tub. This is gonna be good. But it was too comfortable, and I lost that mission element where, you know, you're a warrior and you're on the travel and you're going somewhere and you get that, you know, that feeling of going into a different territory. And, you know, I still pulled out a victory. It was not the type of victory I wanted that night. Come Saturday night, my mind is right, my health is right, my training is extremely well prepared, and I'm ready to give New Mexico, but not only New Mexico, ESPN and the rest of the world the best performance they've ever seen me fight.
Yeah, can you just expound upon about where you're at right now, the place you're in right now, and what people can expect from you come fight night?
It's where I am right now is just a very serene, calm. I feel just very aware, very, very, very aware of what's going on in my life, very aware of the opportunity that has been placed in my destiny. And, you know, I go back 3 months ago, I didn't know if I was going to even be fighting in the UFC anymore. I was at the end of a 32-fight contract, the longest of all time history. The man with the most history in the UFC, the man that brought UFC to Albuquerque and opened the doors, who took Greg Jackson to his first UFC fight, the one who went against Greg Jackson's approval. He said, no, don't you do that game show. That game show, game shows are for, that's a joke. And I listened to the rest in peace Charles Mask of Tap Out. He told me, no, Diego, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. You gotta do this show. You're going to be a star, and I'm going to get you in there. I'm going to talk to Dana White, and I'm going to get you in there. I know you're only a welterweight, but I'm going to pull some strings. I'm going to get you on that show. And I listened to my gut feeling, and I got on that show. And I was the underdog then, and I'm the underdog now. I was fighting middleweights then. I was the smallest guy on the show. I didn't look like anything. I looked like a wrestler. Not a Division I national champion, but just a little old last state to become a state. The poorest state in the nation. Yeah, I was a little nothing. And they threw me in there. You know, what's the big middleweights. And I proved them wrong. I won the show. I was the first. Now, 15, 16 years later, I'm the last. You don't see any of those men still fighting. I'm still here. And I just signed 5 more fights with the UFC. Excited and thrilled to get that run started here in my hometown. I could not be more happy. I could not be more ready. And just there's a lot on the line. Come Saturday night, just know that I'm gonna put it all in the cage. I'm gonna go, and you're gonna see me fight. You're gonna see me fight. You're gonna see me not go to this guy, but through this guy. And I'm ready.
What do you feel it says about you that at your age, UFC has just signed you up for another 5 fights?
Well, there has been men in the past, so I won't act like I'm the first to defy the odds of age. Randy Couture was 44 when he won a UFC championship. There was Yoel Romero, who's 42 now, and he will be fighting Israel Adesanya for the middleweight championship in July. There are anomalies to the textbook of what you've been told, what science says is what. And I am one of those outside the box human beings. I have always looked for the natural fountain of youth. At the age of 20, I started searching for this. I was looking and searching. I said, well, if I can stay younger and stay healthy and heal my body and heal my mind from the inside out, I'm going to have an edge here, and I'm going to have a better chance, a better shot at achieving my destiny and fulfilling what I feel was put in my heart, that I am going to be this legendary great champion. So now, at 38 years old, I will not lie to you. I will be honest. I feel better than I did at 22. There is a method to my madness. Some people say, oh, he's crazy. He's crazy. But you know what? I do the work. I take care of myself. I'm working on myself. I'm healing myself. I'm meditating. I'm putting the time in the nutrition, in the diet, in the even down to the water I drink, and how I take care of this vessel that I've been given. So, am I surprised? No. Am I proud of myself? I just look at it as this is the way it should be for every human being out there. I want to inspire and motivate other human beings to take care of themselves. Outside of fighting, if I could do it in the most extreme measures where I'm taking blows to the head, and you see all these football players and you hear all this talk about CTE, and yes, I've had 5 concussions in my life, only 5, but I have recovered, and I sit before you guys today speaking better than I did 5 years ago. It is very obvious the changes and the transformation that has been made and that is continuing to happen.
You talk a lot about having kind of a different approach to fighting, a different mindset. But the guy you're fighting obviously has a totally different style, especially inside of the cage. The last guy he fought was also somebody who had fought as low as 155 and was able to beat him. Do you feel like you have a similar kind of thing here where you've actually tamed a lot of fighters in the past with fundamentals in a similar way to Tristan Connolly, what he did against him?
Well, Tristan is a good friend of mine. We've trained together during this training camp out at in Las Vegas at the UFCPI. So I know him very well, and we've spoke about Piera. And we know what Piera brings to the table. The thing you need to understand is the Diego Sanchez you will see Saturday night is not the Diego Sanchez you've ever seen before. As I have continued to evolve in my outside-the-box methods, this last year has been the most impactful year of my career. As I have stepped outside of the box of Jackson Wink and the team and doing things just like everybody else. There are other ways to get things done. And not necessarily, why do those other ways have to be wrong just because people say, no, your teammates, who are you training with? I'm Diego Sanchez. I am a legend of the sport. I can walk into any gym anywhere in the world with open arms and have teammates that will help me. What I'm doing now with School of Self-Awareness and my trainer Joshua Fabia is the next level of evolution of the sport of mixed martial arts. It is coming full cycle to where I have a trainer, and I may be the only fighter in the sport of mixed martial arts with a real trainer, a like Mike Tyson and Customato. Someone who really has your back. Someone who really cares. Gives you that time, that energy, that love. You know, things have shifted in the evolution. Things have shifted. Because in the beginning, it was, let's put wrestling together. Let's put boxing together. Let's put MMA together. Let's put kickboxing. Let's put Muay Thai. Let's put Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We're going to Russian Sambo, Taekwondo, all these different arts, okay? And we're going to put these things together. We're going to put it in one box in a room. We're going to put them in the box. We're going to try to figure out our own style. And how can the most complete fighter be? All right? So when this happens, you have 40, 50 guys to deal with. You have 40, 50 guys you have to train. Tell me, how are you going to put the time and the energy into 40, 50 guys that you can't put into one man like a Mike and a Customato? It's not going to be the same. And it's going to change. It's going to be, okay, well, we got to get in. We got to spar. Oh, well, okay, we got to do wrestling class. And it becomes a classes thing where now you're not being trained. You're training yourself. You're training yourself with your teammates. Maybe you learned something from your teammate that day. Maybe he learned something from you. It's a give take, you know. But in the end, you're just trying. You're just trying. You're trial and erroring it. You're not actually putting a method to it and putting a system and thinking it out. And so here I am changing the game. I'm a game changer. And the sport will continue to evolve with or without me. And I just choose to be the one, to be a leader. Step outside the box and say no, I'm not going to be like all these other guys and cut 20 pounds. I'm not going to do it. They don't allow us to do IVs. They don't allow us to do IVs. So how am I going to recover from pulling all the water out of my body and my brain where I'm going to get hit in the head? All right? Cutting weight comes from wrestling. This is where it started. Are wrestlers getting knocked in the head? No, they're not. They're going in there for 6 minutes on a wrestling mat and giving it everything they can for 6 minutes. This is not fighting. This is not combat. All right? So now I'm walking around at my fight week. And yes, I am the David in the Goliath division. My fighters that... My opponents, the ones that are in the welterweight division, they walk at 195 to 200 pounds. Easy. Some of them walk around even at 210. Some of these guys are monsters. You will see the size difference with Michelle Piera and myself come Saturday. Because I tell you right now, I already know, the guy missed weight for his last fight. And he is a big man. He's a giant, but he's draining and killing himself. How do I know this? Oh, little old Diego done that before. Little Diego was 25 once too. Little Diego fought 145, 155, 170, 185. I even fought light heavyweight. I've done it. I am a game changer. And when it came time to make the crucial decision whether I was going to continue to fight and do this sport as a living, I had to make a choice. And when I went deep inside myself and asked that question, am I going to fight 55s or am I going to just go up to 70s? I asked myself. And I told myself, you're going to go in there to combat. You're going to go to war. You need to be the healthiest. You need to be the strongest. You need to be rested. And you need to be focused. Don't forget that fourth element of focus. If your focus is all on weight cutting, is your focus on the fight? Is your focus on your strategy? Is your focus on feeling good and feeling strong and feeling confident? No, it's not. You're breaking your confidence day by day as fight week is going by. And so I'm here and I'm looking to change the game. I'm going to always be continually pushing for hydration tests. They do this in Asia. They do this in Asia. They do hydration tests at weigh-ins so that they know how much water you're pulling out.
Are you under 170 already, like right now?
I will not be under 170. I fight at 171, so I will come in at 171 and where I need to be. Right now, I woke up around 173.
Not cutting weight anymore. Have you felt that it's affected your overall health? Like you feel better even outside of camp, not having put your body through the weight cuts recently?
Well, you just have to think about it like this. Life is patterns, ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs, right? So if you are taking your body down, okay, and then camp's over, all right, back up to 195. Okay, I'll sign a fight. Back down to 170, back up to 195. This is an erratic pattern, all right? This is not normal and it is not natural. Do you see normal people going up and down, up and down, up and down? No. Most people, most healthy human beings carry their weight if they are healthy. Some of you are not, all right? So now that I am consistently carrying my natural weight at 175, the highest I'll get up 177, 178, have a lot of salt, you know, drink a lot of water, you know, eat a couple burgers after the fight. Yeah, maybe I might get up to 178, you know, but none of this, it might be this, but this is healthy still compared to this. And so the patterns of my life have become consistent, as the patterns of my breathing have become consistent.
All right, listen, what do you say? I mean, it's Diego Sanchez. I don't even know how you... I don't even know how you follow that up, man. It's just Diego, but I love it, man. I will say this. If you want to watch the video is up on MMA Junkie. We also have it on our YouTube page as well. I will say this. You know, Diego talks about his commitment to, anti-aging. It is weird how he continues to, like, seemingly get younger every time you see him. Like, visually, it is bizarre, man. The dude does not age. It is weird to see.
Something's got to be working.
Whatever weird stuff he's doing,
and he's doing some weird shit. He's doing some weird shit. But yeah, it seems to be working for him. I mean, can't fault him for it. I mean, when the lengths of career-wise,
it's incredible,
how long,
right?
He's been doing it's unreal. It's unreal. Dude was like, what, UFC?
The Ultimate Fighter
won. Ultimate Fighter won.
The Ultimate Fighter won.
Unreal. There's nobody else.
Greg Jackson to his first
nobody
UFC.
Nobody else is still around.
No.
Right?
That's it.
He's the only one left. So whatever he's doing is working. But yeah, he's out there, man. I love his energy. I love his mind is a... He's a piece of work.
He is
a piece of work.
I love it. I wish I was there to be there for his fight. I just love being around the guy, man. He is an interesting cat. So anyway, that's UFC on ESPN Plus 25. Of course, as I said, Matt Erickson out there. He will have full coverage of that. Well, MMA Junkie will have it all taken care of. And listen, I'm home for a few weeks. You're home for a few weeks. You're not going anywhere.
Nope, I'm not going anywhere.
So that means we can actually get a little flow going. We'll have the full crew together for the next couple of weeks or so.
It'll be good.
Be good.
Be good. I'll feel more human every week.
Every week, I know, man. What you can't see behind the scenes is Cole Coffey having to get up and kind of stretch his legs out and stretch his back, and you can tell there's still issues.
There's still issues. Yeah, happening.
he's fighting through it, but there's still some uncomfortableness. I would say.
Yeah, it's getting better.
That's right. Getting better. The PBRs are going to start to set in. The pain pills are good.
Best medicine yet.
We're good. We'll enjoy it. He'll be back to normal as quickly as possible. We'll all be there. In the meantime, we'll just say thanks for listening.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.